Live from Stadium Swim at Circa Las Vegas.
It's Cofield and Company.
All right, this should be a good one. I'm actually prepared on a Thursday by my standards for once. Greg Salerno's here. We got to pick him up, Griff. Only problem is Griffin blew out his voice yesterday. I don't think he's officially sick or anything. He's just, I don't know what's going on.
There's a lot of people sick at work, man. I've been walking away from people.
You got to start masking up.
I hear him go, and I'm like, nope. And I go like the other side of the hallway and just walk off, man. I'm like,
death to radio people.
Yeah. And then when you walk in, somebody at the desk is sick. I'm like, no.
I have 1,000 bottles of hand sanitizer at home, so I'm ready.
You're like P. Diddy.
Yes, I said it 1,000 specifically. I'm always ready.
By the way, does he not have a Costco card? I don't understand. But why would you have that many little ones instead of just getting big ones?
Oh, is that what they were?
Yeah, they were like little baby oil bottles.
I could use those.
Yeah, but you would probably, if you were going to get 1,000, wouldn't you just get like, you know, maybe 20 big ones instead of little tiny? He has like a bunch of little ones.
Xavier Pope's up later. He had a lot of comments about the baby oil.
Oh, you did?
I'm going to ask him also. I, as a white guy, I don't think, can I say my skin gets ashy? I don't think, does that apply?
It does. I've seen Bill Burr actually say it before.
Really?
Yeah.
His face or his head?
I think he said his elbows.
Oh, yeah, the elbows can be rough.
Yeah.
That's, I would think with the ladies, those rough elbows are a real turnoff. Because you start, you know, you're getting intimate. You start moving around and you're scraping someone.
Yeah. No, I think white people have it really bad. I think it's just the contrast. You don't notice it as much. And I'm
I think I'm used to Vegas. I don't get really dry anymore.
Yeah.
I'm getting uglier, but my skin is not drying out.
My skin is like, you know when that guy touched that dragon in Game of Thrones or whatever?
You have the grayscale?
Yeah, I swear, I was scratching my wrist earlier.
Greg's got grayscale. You look worse every week.
I know. That's terrible.
So we've got Aces basketball coming up on ESPN Las Vegas. That's after we go off. Final regular season game. That'll be here. The Wings are in town at the MUA, Mick Ultra Arena. It looks like no Asia, no Kelsey Plum, no Point Good, and no Jackie Young. So the Wings, who are not good, are actually 3.5-point favorites. So that's coming up. And then a reminder, Thursday Night Football, not here on ESPN Las Vegas because the women's basketball game is. So if you want to hear the Jets and the Patriots, it's going to be on 12:30 the game. I shouldn't rank them. Like I was going to say our fourth radio station, but really it's number one in our hearts.
Weren't
you a big part of the build over there?
I was going to say, I'm like the voice on most of the promos.
Okay. So it's actually our number one station.
It's probably our best one, yeah.
It probably is our best station. Yeah. All right. Well, I don't know if those rough elbows or anything else, your grayscale has to do anything with getting older, but we do have sort of an old guy matchup, and I forgot to look at it. Is Jacoby Brissett like 27, but he just looks like he's 48?
He actually, you know, it's funny because he was with Belichick on that first stint, I believe. Didn't he come in when and Brady got hurt a long time ago for them?
I think he was the backup to Matt Cassel.
Yes, that's right.
I'm kidding. No, he wasn't.
No, he wasn't. I thought he was on that team. And then Brady got hurt and he came in for a couple games.
I'm almost positive he's not.
Okay. Yeah. I think he was on that team twice.
But he's kind of got, there are certain people, he's kind of got that Greg Oden.
Greg Oden was
like 46 when he was 19.
Yeah, he did look like – he looks like he's – have you seen him lately? I saw him in a couple things on the internet.
Looks about the same.
He does. It looks the same. I think he might actually look younger.
He grew in his face.
Steve Martin did that. You know, Steve Martin looked
like crazy?
He looked like he was 80, and then I just saw him on a show a couple days ago, and he looks – he looks good.
Like you finally caught up?
I don't understand. Yeah, I guess so.
Is that going to happen to us? I feel like we're beating the hell out of
ourselves. Yeah, I was going to say, I think I'm way past that, dude.
You know what? Brissett's only 31.
Yeah, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. All right. I thought he's been around a lot longer than
35.
That. My memory's terrible.
Okay. Well, old man A. Rodgers in the game. And I got to tell you, he had some moments last week watching the Jets and the Titans where it was like vintage Aaron Rodgers, especially on the sidelines. Those sideline, whether they're kind of over the top or back shoulder, he's still really good at that.
He actually had a lot of touch on that one. It was almost like a handoff that went down the middle, too, in the end. That touchdown pass, like longer touchdown pass, was pretty nice, I thought.
But he does – I don't think he's in, like, full regular season form yet.
I don't know. I don't know if he'll ever hit that again, but
– Well, no, I don't think he's ever going to be like he was, I mean, even 3 years ago.
I was going to say, it was only a couple years ago, though, that he won MVP.
I don't expect that, but if 80% of Aaron Rodgers is the greatest quarterback in Jets history.
Oh, absolutely.
It might be 60%.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Aaron Rodgers. That's how bad it's been over the years.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that he has a chance to, make the playoffs with that team, but I still feel like there's something missing when you're watching them play. Like you said, maybe it's just rusty or something, but It doesn't look right. It doesn't look like Aaron Rodgers to me anymore.
Their line is also not great right now.
Yeah, but he usually makes a line look good.
He got caught a couple times where he didn't look very mobile. There were a few times where they were right in his face. He had no choice. So I think you get a pretty good Aaron Rodgers tonight. And the Patriots have exceeded expectations so far. Brissett has managed games well.
Yeah.
You knew the defense coming back with Gerard Mayo, a defensive coach, and good personnel that was really good against the run the last couple of years was going to be good. And then the explosion in the offense, if you want to call it that, we'll see if Hunter Henry, who was a really good Chargers tight end, kind of died on the vine the last couple of years. He had a big game last week. And then their run game, you know, Antonio Gibson did some things in Washington, and hometown hero Ramondre Stevenson, who spent his time at Oklahoma, he's a guy who, you know, has had at least one year where he put up, I think it was 1,300 yards combined. So there's some danger on that side, I'm sure. And I'm sure the Pats are motivated by the fact that everyone said they were going to suck. Like, they were going to be worse than the Panthers, and we know the Panthers are the worst.
Yeah, I think the Pats actually, and this is a good year for them because, and we'll probably talk about this later, but, you know, offensive touchdowns are down with passing by a lot. And it seems like a lot of the teams are going back to the run game. And, I mean, this team's averaging, like, 7 runs a carry. I think, like, the Falcons against the Eagles average, like, 7.8 yards a carry. And that, you know, because teams are going back to that two safety thing now.
Uh-oh.
And it's opening up the rest of the field. And I feel like cycles come.
Yes.
Run game, pass game, run game, pass game.
Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with that.
No.
There's nothing wrong with people using the underneath stuff.
Sure.
Maybe you don't get all the explosive plays. So there was a whole thing going on the last day or so. Mel Kiper came out and said, hey, you got to get rid of this too high safety thing. It's ridiculous. And he starts naming quarterbacks of the past.
Yeah.
And about how good they were and the deep passes. Meanwhile, these guys, one, because they didn't have the dink and dunk. Their percentages on completion was low. But if you actually watch them, they really stink at throwing the ball. A lot of the guys in the 70s and 80s. And he'd throw out, like, Burt Jones, because he's a Baltimore guy.
Yeah.
And, like, Burt Jones was always this guy who was on sucky Colt teams. And they're like, imagine if he was on a good team.
Right.
I don't know if he would have been good. But for that team, he was good.
Yeah.
But now we're getting this thing because Caleb Williams hasn't come out of the chute on fire.
Right.
Right? Drake May's not ready to play. I saw a tweet today talking about this, about the too high safety. And someone said Tom Brady, Drew Brees, Peyton Manning, Rodgers, et cetera, all played too high safety defense, too. It didn't stop them. Sorry, but modern quarterback play just kind of stinks, and you guys are afraid to admit it. I feel like this is 80s, 90s NBA love affair all over again.
That's 100% propaganda. And
this
it's the same thing.
This is worse.
It really is.
Terry Bradshaw might not be a 3 in the league now.
Oh,
he's in the
are
Hall
you
of
kidding
fame.
Me? Yeah, there's no – Terry Bradshaw would probably be like a tight end or something, or it would have to try to do something else because there's no – I don't think –
Would the Cowboys have won more Super Bowls with Jacoby Brissett instead of Troy Aikman?
Man,
why are you thinking about
it? I know.
That should be a no. Pat Mahomes.
Tough. Yeah.
Pat Mahomes with a decent team in the 80s in
forget
Super Bowls
about
would
it.
Have gone 10 for 10.
Yeah, forget about it. Yeah, of course. It's
I love
silly.
It. You're like, of course. Meanwhile, these guys are like, quarterback play today is terrible.
It happens in every sport. Plus, it doesn't make any sense because if
Marcus
you go back.
Martin.
Yeah, I know. But if you go 3 years ago, there was 110 pass TDs. Now there's half. You're telling me in 3 years the entire league sucks and all of a sudden they all suck? It doesn't even make any sense.
It's so absurd. Let's do a giveaway right now. 2 tickets for Wu-Tang Clan. Residency is finishing up, at least for this year. AXS.com, theater at Virgin. 2 tickets for the 9/27 Friday show. 364-1100, 364-1100. On the way back, we are going to talk some college football, get ready for another week with some really big games, including Tennessee and Oklahoma. From Learfield, from Bleacher Report, College Football Insider, Michael Felder.
Now back to Cofield and Company, live from Stadium Swim at Circa Las Vegas.
Thursday, that means we check in, getting ready for the college football weekend with Michael Felder. A lot going on this weekend, a lot of storylines going into the weekend, great games. I got to tell you, I went to itsfelder.substack.com. I subscribed. Everyone out there should subscribe. But as soon as I saw you writing about the playoff and where we are right now, I wanted to pull my hair out because I had seen a headline earlier in the week that 6 SEC teams are in the playoff right now. And I'm like, please don't do this early.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look, you know exactly where my head, you know where exactly where my head's at with that. Like, I get it. Yes. It does look like Texas, Georgia, what is it? Alabama, Ole Miss, Tennessee, and Mizzou are all like they're in. Sure. Of course. But they still have to play each other. And I wrote it down because I did. It took me a while to like wrangle everything out. I think Georgia has the hardest path to the playoff of any team because Georgia's going to have to play. And this is only teams that are, look, they struggled with Kentucky. So these are only teams that are in that six. They have to play Alabama, Ole Miss, and Tennessee. All three of those teams, Georgia has to play. You look at when you look at what Alabama has to do, Alabama's going to have to play. They have to play Georgia, obviously. They have to play at Tennessee, and they have to play Mizzou. So that's going to be another. That's not an easy path. But at the end of the day, all those things are going to settle themselves. So we don't have to worry about it right now. I honestly, and couple, you know how I feel about this stuff. Like, I'm not going to say I'm a skeptic, but I am going to say that it's good. It makes it. What do the kids say? It serves good face. Like, it looks really good for the SEC, if you will. But at the end of the day, they all can't be in the top 10, which leaves space for your Notre Dame, leaves space for a USC, leaves space for a Clemson even. So this is going to be a really interesting down the stretch because everybody can't win every game. They can't all go undefeated. So somebody's going to have to lose to somebody, and somebody's going to probably lose to somebody twice. And that's going to probably kick them out of that top 12.
We're going to bang out some Friday games because
yes, sir.
There's some group of five implications. This is a good trio of Friday games. First of all, Stanford goes cross country to take on a Cuse team that I think is surprising a lot of people.
Yeah, Syracuse has been surprising. I think the most interesting part for me is Stanford going cross country. Got a chance to talk to Coach Taylor at ACC media kickoff. And he's like, the biggest thing that we're doing is making sure our guys stay hydrated and we work on conditioning because they have to play these games. And this one, not so much as some of a couple of the other games on their schedule where they have to travel cross country and have to ultimately get up a little bit earlier. This game at least is in their wheelhouse from a time standpoint. So that's going to be, to me, that's the thing I'm looking for. Do they look sluggish? Do they start slow? What does this look like? Especially coming off, what is this? It's a short week for them. This is going to be a really interesting.
You know, we keep, and you're going to reference it, or you did, up at itsfelder.substack.com. Michael Felder's with us here on Cofield & Company. We're putting together these group of five playoff contenders. And am I wrong? Right now, Washington State and Oregon State are group of five, right? They don't have an AQ. They're on the outside looking in. I think Wazoo is really interesting. Now, they're favored by over two touchdowns against San Jose State, but Washington State with that offense, they're pretty stout on defense. They're certainly in this mix, and obviously they got to continue rolling here from 3-0 to 4-0 against the Spartans.
That's a really good point. And you know what? I'll be honest, man. That's not even a thing that I really even thought about. I don't think a lot of people have even thought about it. So that's – hey, hats off to you. That's kudos because, yeah, they are. They are technically at this point in that group of five or in the independents, whatever it is. They don't have that automatic qualifying bid. So that's an interesting one. I think Memphis has got to be super mad that Florida State is so bad.
Yeah.
Because they thought that win would mean something, and now it doesn't. And watching Toledo and UNLV just kind of hover around the edges is going to be really interesting. So there's a lot to talk about there because I don't think the MAC gets a lot of respect. And then obviously we're talking about the Mountain West, which is now – what is it? The Mountain
– You tell me, brother. I don't know anymore.
So it's going to be interesting to see how this all shakes itself out because I think that, honestly – if we look at all these teams, I do think that Boise State, even with that loss, that's still a better loss than some of these other wins. It's a better loss than Memphis's win over Florida State, even though it was in Tallahassee. That tight loss to Oregon is better than that win over a bad Florida State team.
And don't forget, even though Oregon State got their ass kicked by Oregon, they are playing the Mountain West Conference. They do play Boise State, so they kind of control their own destiny. Yes. I think at this point they'd have to – go through and have just one loss, but they are still alive for the college football playoffs. Sure. So Michael Felder's with us. Okay. Let's build on to your Mountain West point about how many teams or how many schools are in the conference. The disloyal four, as some people are calling them, are gone. What do you think this Pac-12 is going to look like? Will it be a across-the-nation conference, or will they stay in the West? What should they do?
So I've heard people say that maybe they get Stanford and Cal back. That's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. Based upon like the legalese and like the contract and the whole deal, it's not going to happen. So I think we're going to see the who's in trouble, the Mountain West, because they can go in and grab some other teams, and that's going to be a problem for them. What they did was get that, as you call them, the disloyal four, right? Like, what if there's a disloyal eight, and all of a sudden so that's the part that's going to be. And now they're back to just being the Pac-12. So that's going to be really interesting to me. I also am looking at teams that, whether it's from the Sun Belt, Conference USA, teams that are on that fringe that are across the Mississippi, so that you can still minimize and manage travel. And the thing that I look at, and this isn't team specific, but the ability to have all this infrastructure in place from a Pac-12 standpoint, from a network, obviously, from people that are that your partners that you're working with, partners that have signed up for multiple years, to have that and then to be able to field something, I think would be is going to be the part that is very interesting to teams that are from, and I say this with, I don't mean any disrespect, but just obviously like smaller leagues.
You said the two most dangerous schools, teams in the country right now are Tennessee and Alabama. Why? Yeah.
I mean, Tennessee, I mean, that's a rattlesnake, baby. Like, you don't want to get in there with them. They are going to get you, and they'll get you again. And they're going to bite you and bite you. Like, it's a hornet's nest, basically. Like, they're going to, because it's not a bee's nest. Bees sting you one time. Tennessee, like a wasp. The whole time. Same thing with the rattlesnake. They'll bite you and they'll bite you again. They'll bite you again. They'll bite you. You're out there in the Southwest. You know that they'll bite you. They'll bite you over and over. And so it's scary what Tennessee can do. And watching them, obviously, against NC State was just like, whoa. And then watching them again score 71 this past week. Okay. Alabama, after watching Georgia play Kentucky, I think Georgia is a little young. I don't think they are as muscled up as they have been in recent years, but I think Alabama is muscled up. And now we're dealing with the Kalen DeBoers, who's never had a team that, quite frankly, was this muscly. And this team has – Alabama's got muscles. You got muscles, and you have a coach who understands how to make Jalen Miro look better. And it's really – it's I think that they're dangerous. Like, we saw – we – that was Wisconsin's worst loss since, like, what was it, like 1995 or something? Like, they hulked up on those boys. And it was just – someone quote tweeted me, and they were like – because Wisconsin went up 3-0. And I said, okay, Wisconsin up 3-0 on Alabama with 55 minutes to play. And then the final score ends up being 42-10. And I was like, yeah, that's what I was talking about. You have to go 55 more minutes against this team, and that's hard to do. And I don't know that there are very many teams in the country that can, and more importantly, that would want to go 60 minutes with Alabama.
So back to Tennessee. Mm-hmm. This feels uncomfortable to me, laying a touchdown at Oklahoma. Is Oklahoma struggling that much that they're going to get blown off their own field?
Yeah, they're in a tight spot. I have no confidence in Oklahoma. Jackson Arnold, he's shown flashes, obviously, but at the end of the day, this team just has not been consistent. I think they are better, a little better defensively. But the reality for me is watching them play, they give me like, this is not the Oklahoma of Lincoln Riley. This is not the Oklahoma of the Kylers and the Bakers and even the Jalen Hurts. Like, this isn't that Oklahoma. And so they got to, with Tennessee, you better find a way to put the ball in the end zone, because they absolutely will. And that's the part that gives me pause about this. And that's why I do think that touchdown, I think Oklahoma's lucky that it is a touchdown. I think that's playing at home.
Colorado's taking on Baylor, slight favorite in that one. And along with the game breakdown, why does Deion have to be so mean to us?
Dude,
generalities thrown around. Like, Deion, I don't do a lot of the things you're talking about.
I just don't – like, it's just you listen, I've written about it. I've talked about it on a couple shows. I'm not a fan. I do think he did say something about some football talk that I did like, and I like when he does that, when he talks about football as football. But all the other stuff and the glimmer, the glass, like all that, I don't need it. I don't want it. I really – like, hey, man. Like, he was right about when he talked about jerseys. He was 100% correct. You have to earn that jersey number. And that you don't get single digits just because you stepped on campus. I agree with that 100%. That is something that people that don't play football, people that aren't around football, they don't realize that. But when UNC, when Marvin Austin was number 9, he got number 9 because he was a dude. When you see a guy walk out on that field wearing 0, 1, yes. 2, 7, those are dudes, and they better be dudes. Otherwise, you don't get that number. That number gets to go to somebody else. So even for me, when I got to college, I was 21. And then we had a guy come in who was a better dude. So I had to be 25.
Yes.
So, I mean, that's just reality. So I agree with him on stuff like that. But then I don't know what if I'm a gambler, I'm staying away from this game because I have no idea what to expect. They cannot block anybody. They cannot run the football. They got smashed out by – what did Nebraska have, 6 sacks? Like, what are we doing? Like, that's your kid. Like, if that was my baby out there just getting smashed up all the time, I'd be like, hey, man, we got to – I'd try to do something about it. And I guess he thinks he did try to do something about it by going out to the portal and getting a bunch of new guys, but that's not how we build offensive lines. You build an offensive line from the ground up. And they just, he refuses to do the thing that has been tried and true over the course of football for a century, essentially. You build this guy up. You build this brand. You build this relationship along the front. And he just refuses to do it. And so I think they're going to have a problem, especially because the game's on the road.
Let's close on what I think is the most intriguing game of the week because it's a regional matchup. Now they're in the same conference. It's weird. LA and Ann Arbor. Michigan is hosting USC. They've made the change at quarterback. I got to tell you, on the USC side, normally I would never buy into this, but the fact that their defense does look completely different. I'm going to point to something, and I think most people would be like, who cares? But when USC blows out Utah State, Utah State ain't good, but they're good on offense. And they held them to 190 yards on offense, USC did. The next week, Utah State and Utah State rolled up 385. So that's another point. Where we can say, hey, this USC defense is legit.
So here's the thing. Michigan's offense is not good. And you get a defense that's starting to find confidence in themselves, a defense that's starting to believe that they can actually get the job done. I want to see what the physicality looks like. That's what's been interesting to me, whether it's Oregon, USC, UCLA. UCLA is also – they're a bad football team. So I want to see what USC looks like from a physicality standpoint. That's the most interesting point to me going into this game. But I also know that they're going to find a way to push the ball down the field. They're going to challenge Michigan's defense. Michigan does have a good defense. So they're going to challenge them. I'm looking forward to watching this football game. I don't have a lean either way, honestly. It's wild to see that USC is a road favorite. Playing in the big house, I will say this, playing in the big house is not the same as playing at LSU's Death Valley. Even at Clemson's Death Valley, it's not the same at playing in Bryant-Denny. It's not the same at playing on the Plains. It's not the same as playing in – well, I was going to say the Swamp for a second. Then I realized, oh, the Swamp. People go there and win right now. So, Ann Arbor is a lot quieter. It's like – for people that don't know this, it's the difference between playing at the Dean Dome, which is huge, and playing at Cameron. Small but loud and aggressive. And those are two different things because people don't realize that the Dean Dome is not loud. Dean Dome don't – like, the students don't even get to sit. There's one group of students that get to sit, and then all the rest of them sit way at the top because you got your blue hairs hanging out, and Michigan's the same way. So this is going to be an interesting game. I'm excited to watch it. Lincoln Riley really – this is a game he could really use, but so could Sharif Moore. So I think both teams are going to want it. It's not an issue of want. It's an issue of execution, and I think USC is probably a little bit further ahead of Michigan than that.
Michael Felder at In the Bleachers up on Twitter. Have a good weekend. Enjoy the games. We'll see you, buddy.
Man, I don't know if the weekend's going to be good. I got to go to a school curriculum night tonight where apparently someone nominated me to be on the school improvement team.
What? you don't have time for that.
I don't even know what that
is. Get out of here.
All right. You have a good one.
Michael Felder, his spot today is brought to you by Treasure Island. We're there on Fridays and Saturdays, Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar. Throw the Flag is back with Danny and Jared. And remember, they'll get you ready for College Football Game Day. Look ahead to the pro football lineup. We're going to have leans and likes later on for the contest that we're in. You can get breakfast on the weekends. I know very healthy Jared is, so he gets the granola parfait. You can also get the chorizo con papas breakfast bowl. It's all going down at Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar. We are there with Cofield and Company on Friday. In the afternoon, 3 to 6 and 9 to 11 a.m., it's Danny and Jared Throw the Flag at Treasure Island.
Now back to Cofield and Company, live from Stadium Swim at Circa Las Vegas.
I know you're going to do your job and what you must do, but your job does not attack. The personal stuff needed to be personal because if we start flipping the script on y'all, you wouldn't like it. I can easy. Thank you, Lord, for stopping me that day. Ooh, that was almost a good one. That would have went viral.
All right, we got a showdown of the righteous, and they tell us they're righteous. They'll stand up on the pulpit and point down at guys like you and me, Greg.
Yeah, well, rightfully so.
Thankfully, Deion, after a week of taking personal shots at players and other coaches, the Lord stepped in and saved him. Then there's our good buddy, Derek Carr, who at times he's a righteous guy and has faith, right? At other times, you're like, well, that was kind of a low character move. Now, I'm not going to say that about him doing a Michael Jackson dance, but the junk grab at the end of his little MJ deal, he actually got him a fine.
Really?
Yeah, he got dinged by the NFL, which, by the way, MJ, if I could go back and watch the halftime show, I think it was in Tampa.
Yeah.
He grabbed his crotch probably at least half a dozen times because was his thing.
Yeah, of course. Other people's too. But yeah,
so we've gone backwards.
Yeah.
In terms of creative liberty.
It doesn't make sense either because I'm pretty sure I've seen other players do this too. But
not in this NFL in 2024.
That's right. It's a new one.
It's a new era. What do you – I have no idea if you're a religious guy or not.
Not at all.
What do you think when Deion will kind of lean on that faith – staff of faith.
I try really hard to see things from other people's point of view. I mean, for somebody who's not a religious person at all, it's all kind of silly to me. But, I mean, again, people get very, very, very serious about their beliefs and stuff. So, like, I try not, you know, I'm just like, hey, that's cool, you know, whatever. Now, you're pointing out hypocrisy. So that I kind of get, you know, because it's always like, and I'm not saying Deion or Derek Carr or any of these guys involved, but the most extreme people who are religious are always the ones they find, you know, in a hotel room doing something they're not supposed to, or, you know, so it's always like the people that are super, 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 super. There's a guy right now running for governor or something today who's like super, super anti stuff, and they just found a bunch of posts of him doing the same stuff.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and it's like really crazy. I think it's North Carolina. And it's just, you know, people like that, I think it really gets my goat because they're very hypocritical. But
you know what I'm especially anti?
Yeah.
Is media people going after media people. I'm not against that. Say their name. If you're going to be critical of someone, say their name. On the way back, Xavier Pope is going to join us. We've got a lot of important issues to get into. Media tomfoolery will be at the top of the list if someone was making a run at Pat McAfee today.
Now, back to Cofield and Company, live from Stadium Swim at Circa Las Vegas.
Want any returning LIV players to hand back money they've made from LIV or give money to charity? Or pay a fine, or give back prize money they might win from future tour events. Hold on, is this a reasonable request?
I can't use the words that I would use to the face of any one of those colleagues if they suggested that. I guess if I wore a black tank top and I could get away with those words on this show, I would use them. I would use them to their faces.
Yeah, I don't even think I can write them down to hold them up. There would be a suspension coming and I'm not ready for that.
So that's Michael Wilbon making a point about PGA golfers, LIV golfers, and then takes a shot at Pat McAfee that he could use bad language if he had a black T-shirt on.
Tank top, I think he said.
Couple of things. You're right, tank top. Couple of things. Say his name. Because if you're afraid to even say his name, you're certainly not going up to a golfer and saying F off. And I would also dare Michael Wilbon to do that to whatever Rory is on. I'm sure it's good fitness stuff. But he's yoked. I don't know if he can fight. But do it to Dustin Johnson, who knows what condition he's going to be in, right?
Sure.
So I don't want to hear, like, I love tough guy media people who won't even mention someone they're ripping. Then I would say it to their face. You wouldn't. And I don't even understand the premise of this. I think Xavier Pope has a lot of thoughts on this. I just thought that was weird, Xavier.
Yeah, I think that Michael Wilbon chose the topic in order to express his frustration. And I'm unsure about what other conversations he's having with the network regarding his role in the network or any other individuals of the network. But it appears as if Michael Wilbon, who, you know, legacy sports media, been around ESPN over 30 plus years since I was a kid, basically complaining about that certain individuals have the right to be able to say and do whatever they want. Pat McAfee getting drunk on air, cursing, the format being changed for him when ESPN changed its policies in relation to how people behave after, and pretty much in the aftermath of how they've changed up top what happened between Jemele Hill and former President Donald Trump. And so I think that that's where Russell Wilbon, he didn't say Tony he said himself specifically. So I think that it was a real subtle jab at basically talking about on the white privilege that people like Pat McAfee, with the type of politics that Pat McAfee enjoys, able to do whatever he wants on air. He didn't come out and say it directly. I don't think he was coming directly at Pat McAfee. I think that was a complaint he was really lobbying at the Worldwide Network.
Do you think there's kind of a thing here with Wilbon, Xavier, that he's – I think he kind of is talking about Pat McAfee, but not maybe him specifically, but this whole, like, Joe Rogan bro podcast type movement that's kind of happened where – you know, these dudes pretty much say whatever the hell they want. And it's like, hey, what happened to the guys who've actually been doing journalism all this time?
Yeah, I don't know if he's relating specifically to journalism per se, but I do think he's leaning in some of the white privilege, you know, and that able to have those type of platforms. And if someone, like, think about it, Stephen A. Smith, Shannon Sharp, both of them, they have both platforms outside of ESPN where they are able to curse and be more themselves and be a little bit more open with how they express themselves. Even though something like that would be popular on ESPN because of the nature of how fans all work and some of the politics that support Pat McAfee would complain, even though they would be able to get high ratings. And so that's why you don't see those programs at ESPN. You see them on separate platforms. And I think that's kind of getting to the heart of where Michael Wilbon's coming from, in my opinion.
Okay, there's a couple things here. Do I agree with you that Unk and Ocho Cinco we'll have a tougher time finding that mainstream platform? Yes, and I do agree there are reasons behind that. But I'm going to go back to Wilbon. It is an utterly absurd premise that Michael Wilbon, because he said, if I did that, I'd be suspended. You've been with ESPN, and that show has been on for like 30 years. I guarantee you Kornheiser and Wilbon can virtually do anything they want. Man up and speak out. If you don't like another host or the show or the format, speak out directly. There's no way they would suspend Michael Wilbon for going strongly after McAfee and even using some language.
But think of it this way, though, Steve. You know that Tony and Wilbon, that's not their stick, right? It's these two friends who act different, but come together as sports fans, and that's kind of how they were based on. And so that's who they are. They're not going to go outside of that. They're not going to, quote-unquote, do whatever they want. Like I said in the beginning, I think that Michael Wilbon maybe was speaking with him in the conversations he's having behind the scenes with other talent in regards to Pat McAfee. I don't think he was really more so referring to himself and what he could say, what he can do, because you're not going to see Michael Wilbon do anything other than what he's been doing the last 30 years.
Oh, man. See, here's the thing, though. Be who you are, and if you've changed over the years, just be who you are. And the other part of it is that audience that watches that show, and I'm not ripping them. It's never really been my cup of tea. I think that audience would eat that for freaking lunch, dinner, breakfast, late night snack if Wilbon was ranting all the time about, you know, back in my day and look at these kids. I think his audience would love it.
I think there is something to be said about that, Steve. So I think you kind of do have a point. But I think that Michael Wilbon and Tony Kornheiser, they're legacy ESPN. They're able to have these discussions without having to go that place. And it's kind of like warm milk as a sports fan. You drink it. It's not the most spectacular thing in the world, but it's kind of essential to making you feel comfortable as a sports fan. I think that's the space they occupy, and that's why you don't see them go outside of that.
Talking to Xavier Pope, you know, to your point, Xavier, though, too, Kornheiser, wasn't he suspended a few years ago for saying something about the boots of a colleague or something like that, or saying she wore some hot boots or whatever, and he was suspended from his radio show and the regular show from ESPN for a while?
Yeah, there was something to be said about that, but I mean, but even still, though, right? I mean, that's just him being an old weird guy, right? I mean,
that's a brand.
And so I think that they really haven't got outside of the stick that they are used to, and I think that that's the stuff you put on in the airport, you put on the bars, and oh, there's ESPN on television, and it's there. And I think that that's something that ESPN relies on. I think a lot of his fans rely on, and that's why you see them staying with that same stick. You're not going to see Tony and Wilbon go outside of this. They get paid tons of money. There's no reason to go outside of that.
Xavier Pope is with us. Listen, I think this media stuff has some audience. I also think it's way overplayed, and yesterday, we had Woj retiring in our notes, and I'm like, I just don't think people care that much. I don't think we're that relevant. You can counter that, but I personally thought the story with Woj that is interesting is someone who's at the height of their career, their height of their occupation, going, you know what, I don't like this anymore. I'm going to go do something else. I thought that was cool.
I think it's cool that you decide to do whatever you want. I mean, and Woj could do what he does in his sleep. I mean, so did Adam Schefter and some of these other guys. And I think that maybe Woj has his ambitions set on running a major sports team. I think that's where it starts at St. Bonaventure, but that just gives him the credibility to move up. You saw, even you're looking at J.J. Redick getting the Lakers job, you know? So I think that that's what you're seeing is that guys are positioning themselves to get jobs, and I think that that's just another case of it. I don't think that he's, you know, he's burnt out by what he does. He just wants to do something different and leverage what he's been able to do in his career to be able to get there.
Do you think that the Woj thing has anything to do with the timing of, like, these other guys kind of coming up in the same field? Because for a while it was always like, Woj bomb, and it was always the same guy. Then you had Shams, other guys coming up. Is it kind of like, oh, man, the magic's gone, I'm just going to get out of here while I can?
I totally disagree with that. I think that the Shams, Woj bombs, all that is part of the marketplace of breaking the news that they do. I think this it's just a benefit, Woj, making more money. The fact there was a marketplace for it. And so, no, I think that he's getting out at a high point, and he could have stood to make more money based on this becoming a popular form of fans being engaged with how they receive their sports content.
Xavier Pope is with us. So I'll make one last reference to Wilmont. I do think as media people get older, they see people come in, even if you don't like the bro culture, it is something different. It is inventive. They are good at it, and it can make you mad. It can make you jealous. I'll give you something I'm jealous of. You post a picture, and you got your daughter there. She's got a 3.9 GPA at DePaul?
Yeah, TV film program. I'm very proud of her, Emery, my sweetie. She has a job working here, and as well and working in film. And she's just such a really brilliant kid. Every parent wishes for a kid who is a model citizen, has amazing character, and does her thing. She just turned 19. I'm so proud of her. She makes my job as a dad just so easy. I'm so blessed and thankful to have her as a daughter.
Well, congrats on that, Greg. Fire in.
I was just wondering, because I know we talked about this a little bit before the season started, and we were talking about Chicago, and I don't remember your exact stance on this, but how are you feeling about now with the Caleb Williams, Justin Fields thing after what you've watched through 2 weeks?
I think, the interior line of the Chicago Bears, and it doesn't appear they're going to change much.
Yeah.
So the Bears are no better off than they were a year before. You up in your team. To put a new guy quarterback, the guy that Justin Fields is 2-0 at Pittsburgh. Fans love him. The fans were supporting him when he got there, and he's not giving up that starting job. Now, Russell Wilson is going to stay on the bench, right? this is something I predicted too. I said that once Justin Fields is going to play, it's an easy decision. The Steelers made. The Steelers always make the right decision. Good organizations make good decisions. Struggling organizations. They gamble and make bad decisions. I think that was what the Bears' problem is, and they basically replaced him for a guy who wants to be a pocket passer, is too short to pass. I don't think that Caleb Williams looks ready for the National Football League, and it's unfortunate that some guys like have to be thrown up front when they can't sit back and hold a clipboard for a few years and learn a position, and particularly when their team is not putting them in a position to succeed.
Let's pump the brakes a little bit. It's only a couple of games. Now I will say this on the offensive line thing. The Bears had already gone out, and they got DJ Moore in the fold, you know, before this season, and they go out and get Keenan Allen. Roma Dunze was a piece, kind of a luxury piece. Get more offensive linemen. Now, they can't unravel that. But I still think Caleb Williams has plenty of time here. Last week he was sloppy. He was inaccurate. He was getting freaked out by the rush. Let's relax.
The game is too fast for him, Steve. But here's
stop!
Thing. We've heard this old adage. You build your team from the inside out. And that's not something the Bears have done. They try to build their team from the outside in. The Bears' defense actually is pretty stellar. They've kept them in a couple of games and pretty much won them the first game. That's something that Bears fans, they love. I mean, it's great to have terrible offense and great defense in Chicago, but Chicago Bears fans have been dealing with that for the last, 60 years. And so they want a new story in town. So it's great to have a great defense, great special teams, but they want to be able to have a solid offensive side of the ball, and it doesn't look like that's going to improve anytime soon. see.
Xavier Pope is with Cofield and Company, attorney out of Chicago. He is one of our key provocateurs. I think I'm going to have that in your answer every time. I had a Wilbon moment where I was like, is this part of my brand? And then I thought, yes, it is. Diddy and 1,000 bottles of baby oil. You followed it up with a comment about another house, den of something. What were you trying to say here with the baby oil?
Oh, well, Playboy Mansion. It was a place where people were flown in to have parties, and some of the parties. And there was also a documentary about Hugh Hefner when people said some pretty salacious things about him in terms of his abuse and who he was. And in a culture like now with Diddy getting arrested, Hugh Hefner would die, 7 years ago? Would his career, with his legacy, with the legacy of Playboy, look differently? And just even now, that things have changed dramatically, even in the 5-10 years, with the Harvey Weinsteins, the Bill Cosbys, and the R. Kellys of the world being held responsible for some of their sexual abuse. And so, how does that hold up against the light? Well, you can't look at it now because he's passed away. But I think that how he looks, and how he's perceived. They look different in the light of what Diddy did with his freak-off parties.
Okay. Again, I had to kind of make this moral decision to go in the next direction. In prison, do you think Diddy is going to get some fine food? Will he have access to croissants?
Diddy is not going to get any access to any croissants. He may get a piece of white bread, one little circle of piece of meat inside of it.
Now, explain EP why I mentioned that, because it was on your timeline. Not specifically Diddy and croissants, but croissants as a maybe not the most workable bread.
And I said, I have my food takes are amazing. And the thing is croissants are amazing, Steve. They taste absolutely delicious. But when you have a sandwich with a croissant, it's a mess, right? It falls all over the place. The texture is great. The flavor is great. Why do we have to have a crescent-shaped bread that is so amazing to eat? So I want a good sandwich with a croissant. Can't you agree with that, Steve? But can we have a more workable shape of a croissant bread?
It's messy. It's not functional. Would you rather go with a croissant bun or a croissant hoagie roll?
Ooh, that sounds amazing.
Let's go crazy. A croissant taco.
Hoagie roll, Steve. Let's go. You just fire me up like I've never been fired up before.
I mean, Big Bread can do it. They already do it with pretzel now. They're innovative with the pretzel. Big Bread can do croissant in any shape they want.
Yeah, let's do it. I hear, if you're in the Las Vegas area, you're listening to this right now, make bread. I want you to make it. I want Steve to go have some, and him to talk about it on air. The challenge has been put down, is laid down, Las Vegas. Let's see it.
Xavier, we appreciate it. Love you, buddy.
Love you guys.
We'll come back. Stick with us on the video. A full hour of croissant bun discussion on the way.